we will increase our own value. Fourth, embrace her, and she will bring honor. Lay hold of her, get her, hold her closely, and we will have honor. In summary, loving wisdom, valuing wisdom, holding on to wisdom, and never letting go of wisdom. That will bring protection, perseverance, promotion, and honor. Once again, showing the reward of obtaining wisdom. Solomon is always beating this through about how wisdom rewards those who get wisdom. We're also told in the same passage, wisdom will be an ornament of grace and a crown of glory. So similar to the previous writings of Solomon, passing along the importance of wisdom to his son, just as his father passed the importance of wisdom to him, Solomon is trying to create three generations of those who loved wisdom and see its great importance. Any other thoughts on that, or comments or questions about that? Yeah. I can know what Socrates or Confucius says, but if I am in fact confused this about what Confucius said, what good is it to me? Very good point. And all you're getting, get understanding. Get wisdom and get understanding. They go hand in hand together. Very good point. Anything else? Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Because, you know, I think about back to a previous chapter when we discussed, happy is the man who finds wisdom. Wisdom is constantly personified as a woman because of, you know, we talked about for the fact that wisdom itself is a feminine noun. Happy, in the previous chapter, is a masculine noun. There is a almost marital relationship that we are to have with wisdom, that in the same way a husband and a wife love each other, I have to love wisdom, and wisdom can help me. You know, I think about that all the way back in Genesis, when the Lord said, I will make a helper suitable, I will make the other half, I will make you whole, I am going to give you a complementary relationship with someone. And think about that word helper. Someone, I forget who it was, but they described it like this. Apparently, they described the helper as being strong where the other is weak. Again, that complementary relationship. And so in the case of humans and wisdom, you know, we can only make it so far without it, especially if it's godly wisdom. All right. Continuing on in chapter 4, we pick up verse 10, and we'll go into verse 19 in our reading here. And we'll go back and make comments. Verse 10 beginning, it says, hear, my son, and receive my sayings, and the years of your life will be many. I have taught you in the way of wisdom. I have led you in right paths. When you walk, your steps will not be hindered, and when you run, you will not stumble. Take firm hold of instruction. Do not let go. Keep her, for she is your life. Do not enter the path of the wicked, and do not walk in the way of evil. Avoid it. Do not travel on it. Turn away from it and pass on. For they do not sleep unless they have done evil. And their sleep is taken away unless they make someone fall. For they eat the bread of wickedness and drink the wine of violence. But the path of the just is like the shining sun that shines ever brighter unto the perfect day. The way of the wicked is like darkness. They do not know what makes them stumble. So Solomon starts off this section by saying, "Hear, my son, and receive my sayings, and the years of your life will be many. I have taught you in the way of wisdom. I have led you in the right paths." So what do we learn about Solomon based on the things that he says here? Good teacher. His walk matched his talk. Okay. I do believe that we're onto something here. You know, Solomon was not perfect. And Rehoboam, you know, we see his story. But we see that Solomon makes every effort for him, regardless. Oh, yeah. It was important to him. Just as everyone who's a parent here wants their child to go down the right path. And if you bring them up in the way of the Lord, that's all the more important to you. And Solomon did that. Solomon made every effort for his son to chase after wisdom, for him to use wisdom. Because who better to learn from than who, you know, in retrospect, we recognize him as the wisest man who ever lived. Maybe then it was underappreciated. But regardless, absolutely. Yep. That's how it goes. But we see that Solomon made his efforts. He made every effort for his child. He tells them, "I have taught you the ways of wisdom. I have led you in right paths," just as any parent should do for their child. And of course, as we've been saying, we recognize how wise and godly wisdom Solomon is, and how lucky Rehoboam was in that position. And what did he do? Squandered it. Squandered those teachings. Did not live by them. But Solomon continues. He continues to show the good that comes from walking in wisdom. He says, verses 12 and 13, "When you walk, your steps will not be hindered. When you run, you will not stumble. Take firm hold of instruction and do not let go. Keep her, for she is your life." This was the intended result of him teaching his son the things that he did. If his son listened to him and abided by what was taught to him, Solomon says he will neither be hindered nor stumble. He says not to let go of instruction because she is your life. What does this mean? Pardon? Okay. Good. Anything else? Absolutely. Instruction is life-changing. Your life, how you live it, how you conduct yourself in the days of your life, is defined by your instruction or your discipline. The instruction we receive is meant to turn us into better versions of ourselves. And so when we receive useful instruction, godly instruction, as Solomon is trying to relay here, We need to hold on to that and let our lives be made better by that. Because what other kind of instruction is there? Pardon? Evil. It's weird to think about being instructed in the ways of evil. Got to make sure that we're holding on to that godly instruction. How do we get instructed by evil? Influence. Very good. World. Hit me. Yeah, that's rough right there, situation. That goes to show. Mom and dad try to stop, right? And so that's what Solomon's trying to do with his son. I'm writing all this stuff to you, pretty much 9 chapters worth of stuff that is going to be pivotal in how you are going to lead your life. And you know, that's one instance at one point in time. This is, I'm showing you the entirety of life. I want to show you that all of life is defined by the instruction that you listen to, which I find ironic considering the very first chapter we read about Rehoboam being king. But we'll get to that when we get to the questions. Got that point right there. Over and over and over, Solomon says, listen, heed, do or do not. And it's, you know, as a kid, as a person that, you know, grew up making the mistakes, it's rough. You have those moments where you wish you listened, where you wish you didn't go down this path. And now you got to live with this regret. I'm not a parent yet. If I can be just a little bit vulnerable and 100% honest, as much as I want to be a parent, it is also the most terrifying thing to me, especially in this day and age. There is so much crazy stuff going on out there, and you can get easy access to it on one of these things. Nothing's new under the sun. Again, you get the same things quicker. Anyway, as a Christian, not even as a preacher, but as a Christian, I want my kids to go down the right path. I want them to follow after God. I want to be able to be up there someday with them and be like, you know who that is? That's your great grandmother. That was my grandmother when I was alive, when she was alive. That would have been an amazing thing. But hey, I can only hope, I can only pray, because I know, just as I did, they're going to make their mistakes. I just hope that they stay on the right path in the long run. Moving on from that, we'll pick up in verses 14 through 17, where, you know, Solomon's given the opposite here. He's saying, do not enter the path of the wicked. Do not walk in the way of evil. Avoid it. Do not travel on it. Turn away from it. Pass on. For they do not sleep unless they have done evil, and their sleep is taken away unless they make someone fall. For they eat the bread of wickedness and drink the wine of violence. So what warning do we see here given about the path of the wicked? Avoid it at all costs. He says, don't enter, don't walk on it, avoid it, don't travel on it, turn away from it, pass on. All in succession there. And it's slightly comical, just imagining this path leading to this dark and decrepit forest and an old wooden gate with a bunch of chains, locks, barbed wire, a moat, a dozen signs that says the same thing, don't go in here. That's essentially what Solomon just did. And I don't blame him. I do not blame him. Just because it's slightly comical doesn't make it any less serious. Because the fact of the matter is, the path of the wicked does not look like a dark and decrepit forest that's locked up. It looks beautiful. It's open wide. The trees are full and luscious. And it's a very inviting path. But what is the end result of walking this path? Robbed of sleep. What robs you of your sleep? You ever been awake at night, worrying about the next day, worrying about what's going to happen tomorrow? Or maybe you're just caught in this memory of what happened earlier today, or a week ago, or 10 years ago. And it's hard to get to sleep because of that. Now imagine you're losing your sleep because you've got this addiction. Your hands start to twitch because you haven't done the evil thing yet. You haven't had that drink. You haven't watched inappropriate thing on the internet. You haven't gotten online and left some nasty comment on somebody's picture. It's a weird feeling to think about. That this is the pure form of wickedness. I haven't indulged myself in the darkness. I haven't satisfied my lust. I have not satisfied my personal desires. It's hard to imagine, right? But then change the scenario. You get caught up in the heat of the moment, and all those things become easier. And the very end result of walking this path, becoming one of the wicked, be destroyed by the wicked, or both, more than likely. The path of the wicked, it's not a path of power. It's not a path of fun or of riches or fulfillment. It's a path of destruction. Your mind, your body, your soul is all being manipulated, messed up by wickedness and these evil influences, and will ultimately be condemned if you don't get off the path of wickedness. That's the scariest thing of all. Like we talked about back in chapter 1, if sinners entice you, do not consent. Because they want to drag you down. They want to invite you into this club. But it's not a good club. It's just going to mess you up. Yes. Join my club. Except for me, it was more 14, 15 whenever I was in my rebellion cycle, if you will. My rebellion phase. My I think I'm right above all else phase. Woo! If there's any days I'm glad are done, it's the teenage days. You know, appreciate that comment there, because, you know, I think it's something, you know, if we're being honest, we all deal with. I can only imagine maybe like a very small sum that during that phase of their life actually listened. Wasn't me either, sister. It says, chapter 14 of 1 Kings, if I remember correctly. Yeah, 1 Kings 14:21. Rehoboam, the son of Solomon, reigned in Judah, was 41 years old when he became king, and reigned 17 years in Jerusalem, and did evil in the sight, provoked God to jealousy. So that's absolutely right. Sometimes that immaturity can come with us. Maybe Rehoboam was having a midlife crisis, who knows? But I guess so. But, yeah. I can only imagine when Solomon was actively writing these proverbs. These, my son, listen to these things. We can imagine this was when Rehoboam was young. We can imagine that he's in his mid to late 20s and he's writing these. We don't know, per se. But we recognize, again, the effort Solomon made for Rehoboam. And it really, in retrospect, makes us appreciate all the more what our parents tried to do for us. And even if we didn't abide by it then, we remember it now. And we don't forget it now. Yeah, because here's the thing. As somebody that, as a preacher, I want to disagree with you. Because, hear me out. Hear me out. Because my whole goal and my want is that we don't have to go through those bad experiences. We don't suffer the consequences of sin because we're not sinning. That's my want. That's my desire for myself, for each and every one of you. However, to her point, I feel like that was me growing up too. I feel like it was, you know, all after the fact that I got my head screwed on straight. Stop being childish. Stop craving, you know, these things. And I've been striving to be on the right track ever since. Sometimes you need like you said, that fall on your face, that wake-up call maybe. I love this. I heard, I'm running out of time, but real quick. I heard this story of somebody who read the passages of Scripture that talks about testing silver. And so she goes and inquires to a silversmith about this testing of the silver. And basically, testing of the silver is putting it in the fire and removing all the gunk and the excess stuff off of it. And then he was asked, how do you know it's done? When I see myself in it. Think about that. When God sees him in you, that's when you know the silver is done. And we are 2 minutes over. So thank you all for the discussion. Very great discussion tonight. We'll pick up verse 18. We'll pick up in verse 18. I have no idea what next Wednesday is going to look like.